So we're reading Bamidbar chapter 13. This is the famous story of the Meraglim. Interesting to note that the word Meraglim is not in the text anywhere, not here and not anywhere about these people, if I remember correctly. So that's the language of Chazal. There's many parshas like this where we know them by a certain name, but that name is not to be found in the text itself. There's famously also another version or another retelling of this story in Sefer Devarim, where Moshe talks about it, and there's retellings of the story in Sefer Tehillim, maybe in other places also. We will try to read it the way it says here and focus on what is going on. Now, to put it in context for a second, right, as we've discussed a minute ago, they already started their journey towards land of Canaan, the land of Israel. That started in Parshas Baloischa in chapter 2 or 3 chapters ago, where Moshe told yesterday is going, and they started to travel with the whole story. We had a whole long story of the Machnes, of the Tekias, the whole order, how they were traveling. So this has already been happening. Now, so therefore they're coming close to Eretz Canaan. They're really on the way. They're on the march toward the conquest of Canaan. That's not something that's in the future. They're already on the way. Sometimes we read the story, don't realize. We think they're like camping in the desert and like randomly sending back. No, they're already on the way. And as we've discussed, all of these questions, all of these problems, nesiones that are talked about in the Midbar, are all challenges and debates, we can say in some sense, about the leadership, about the way in which they're being led. So we will have to read it with that in mind. It's very clearly a debate in that, although like, we'll see how Moshe frames it, how Hashem frames it, the questions that the Meraglim raise. But that's the story. Now, the first thing we noticed in this telling of the story is that it's framed in the style that we call the style of Vayikra Bamidbar, the style of Torah Kehanim, which is always a mitzvah, a command, and the carrying out of that command. So we have here a mitzvah. We have Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Laim. Hashem tells to Moshe, send people, shlach lecha anoshim, they will do. This is the verb, not the word meraglim, the word viyasuru. Like, it means something like to. It sounds in English the same as to tour, but means something like to check out, to something like to spy, but sort of like to check out, to find out the situation, to find out the ways of Eretz Canaan, which he's giving, and it will be one person for each Shevet, and these persons are the Nasi, so we've already known who they were, although here we'll see that these are not the same Nasiim that we've heard of before, so either they change their names, or it's different ones, something unclear about this, because we've already had earlier, the list of the Nesiim for the countings and for the Degel, for the Golem, for the Machnes. And there were, so therefore that's the command. And then Moshe does it. He sends them from Midbar Puran, which is where they camped here, right? From Chatzeret to Midbar Puran. Al Pi Hashem, according to the command of Hashem. And there are all Rosh Bnei Yisrael. These are the leaders. So maybe these are the more military leaders. Their previous ones are somewhat less military leaders. So these are the ones suited to be take care of the spying project. That's what they're doing. And now we have the list of their names. Interesting. So like we said, they're not the same names as before. There's the list of their names. And this maybe is also connected with the concept of genealogical list. It's important to have the names of them. Of course, some of them will be important later, some of them we'll never hear of again. But there's a list of names. We have for Reuven, for Shimon, for Yehuda, for Yisachar, for Ephraim, for Benjamin, for Zebulun, for Yosef, for Menashe. We already had Ephraim, interestingly, not on the same list. For Dan, for Asher, and Naphtali, for God, each one the name of the person who was sent. The two ones that are important to notice is, as we noticed, from Yehuda, there was someone Kulev ben Yefuna, from Ephraim, someone Hashem ben Nun. And we have an interesting note where Moshe called Hashem ben Yeshua. Now, this Yeshua we've heard of before already. It's not the first time we've heard about him. And here, apparently, if he was called Yeshua, he wasn't called Yeshua now. He was probably called Yeshua much earlier because we had heard him being called Yeshua in Parshas B'Shalach, in Parshas B'Haloscha. We've heard of this Yeshua several times already before. In Parshas Kisisa, Yeshua was mentioned, and probably this means to say Moshe called him Yeshua. Probably the simple meaning is when he became his Meshuras, his closest person, his lieutenant, or whatever you want to call him, that's maybe when he gave him the name Yeshua, so which is a lengthening of Hashem, or adding God's name to it. It becomes a theophoric name. He changes his name. So that's probably what's going on. And saying what this pasuk is saying is connecting this Yeshua ben Nun mentioned here is the same you will know other places as Yeshua ben Nun. That's probably why this note is here. Those are the names. So now, we had earlier a command of Hashem to Moshe to send them. Now we're going to have also the command that Moshe, or maybe more precisely, the instructions that Moshe gives them for their spying. So Moshe sends them and he gives them with instructions. He says, go up here in the south, in the Negev. You will go up to the mountain. The mountain is the next area where Hebron is, as we'll see. The mountainous area, the Judean hills, we can call them. And you will see, you will check out the land. You will see what is the land. And the land and the people, so two things. It's repeated twice. The Oretz, I don't know why. I mean, we could give interpretations of this, but maybe the first one is just a very general question, and then he gives more details. The questions, but really he's asking for information about two things, about the land and about the people. So what's about the land? What's about the people? Are the people sitting in it? Are the people living there? Are they strong? Are they many? Is the land good? Are the cities built in them? Are they strong cities? Are they cities with walls? Are they open cities, open camps? What kind of city are they? Is the land, the agricultural land, fat or thin or weak? Does it give out good fruits? Does it have trees? So those are two things. There's, as we learn always, there's part of the land which gives out the wheat, the cereals, the grain, and then there's the part in the sense that it gives out trees. And he says, you will bring me back some of the fruits of the land. So we'll try it out. It's like to check it out what it is. And there's a note from the narrator saying this was the time that the grapes were getting ready. So that's probably what they will bring back, as we'll see in a second. So this is just preempting that, saying this is why they brought back only grapes, because that was the time of the grape harvest, or however you call it, when you cut down grapes. So that's Moshe's command, Moshe's instruction to them. And now we have the same in the same structure. They're doing it. They go, they do that. And we add a little more information. From Midbar Tzin ad Rechov Levei Hamas, and this seems to be all the way from south, all the way up north, as we'll see later in the Gvilas Soros, Levei Hamas is all the way north. So that's probably the general parameters of their quest. But more detailed, first they go up to the south, they go to Hebron, which is the Har. And in Hebron they see these three people, Achiman, Sheshe, and Talmai, who are children of Anak, who are giants. And it also gives an interesting note about Hebron. Hebron was built 7 years before the city of Mitzrayim Tzoyan. This seems to be a note about ancient cities, about the ancientness, the oldness of the city. It seems to have been important in those days to see a city is old, it's more important. It's saying that Hebron is an important ancient city, and maybe that's why there's still these giants there. Giants are said to be from some primordial ancient time. So that's the story of Hebron. And of course, they're coming from Mitzrayim, so they know Tzoyan, great city in Mitzrayim. They know Hebron is also a great city. So this seems to be like a report of how great the city is. Of course, it's not yet a report. It's the narrator telling this. And then there's another report. They come to a place called Nachal Eshkol. We'll see in a minute, this is probably a place known to the people, or at least people reading the Torah much later, know a place called Nachal Eshkol. But you should know that this name was given them. So they come to Nachal Eshkol. From there, they cut a branch of grapes, a branch and a bunch of grapes, and they carry it on a stick, two of them. They take also some of the pomegranate, some of the figs. Apparently, this is the summertime, so they grow in the same time, more or less. And that's why it's called Nachal Eshkol, because the people, the Yidden, the Bnei Yisrael, Kora Eshkol Anovim from that place. And that's what Moshe said. So in other words, we see them doing exactly what Moshe said. They check out the land in general. We see them that maybe Midbatzin Adrechel Levei Hamas. We check out the cities, Hebron, and the people living in the cities, that they're great people, they're Anak, so they're strong. And they bring the Priyoret, so it's in the same order as Moshe told them. We have the report of them doing what Moshe said. Now we have them coming back. That's where the story gets interesting, right? They come back all the way after 40 days, Meketz Arba'im Yom, the same language of the Mabul, Meketz Arba'im Yom, the end of 40 days, they come back. And they come back to Moshe, to Aharon, to the entire community, to the same place where they left from Midbar Horon. Now we learn that it's also called Kodesh. And they answer them, give them their response, they show them the Prioritz, and this is their response, the words that they say. So they've showed them, they tell them, we've came to the land. Regarding your question, if it's a good, it's a fruitful land, agriculture, the answer is yes. It's Zavas Chalav Edvash, this is of course the famous language that Torah always uses for Tisrol. It pours milk and honey, and they show them that period. This is the fruit that we bring as an example. We bring you an example of the sample of the fruit. But regarding the other two questions about the people and the cities, the answer is that the situation is bad. In other words, it's good, but it's bad. The people are strong as a am. They're strong, they're courageous, maybe even strong people who live in it. Their cities are very greatly reinforced. But Tzuras Gedolas Mod means they're walled cities. They're reinforced. They have many reinforcements. And not only that, we have Yelidei Anok we saw there, which are even more strong over than regular people. They're giants. They're hard to deal with, as Moshe himself said. And this seems to have to do with the ancientness of the city, as I said. And they describe exactly where each powerful enemy lives. Amalek in the Negev, Chiti, Yevusi, Amori in the Har, which is where they went, and the Knani is on the Al-Ayam Valiad Yarden, so in the coastal plain or in the Yarden plain. These are four geographical areas of the Eretz Yisrael. So that's what the Meraglim answered. As far as we can tell, this is a correct answer. We said before that that's what they said. Now, the Pusik describes that this a debate. We could read it, if we simply read it, until now they didn't say anything bad. There was nothing evil or wrong with what they said. But obviously, they're describing this as a very hard place to conquer. There's very hard. Wherever you go, there's these powerful enemies. Now, Kalev, which we've not mentioned before, makes the people silent. El Moshe, so he tells them, Sham Moshe will speak, or he's making them silent or focus on Moshe. It's not clear what Moshe is doing here. And he says, we will go up, we will inherit them, we'll conquer them. Kiyochal Nichla, because we could, we're powerful enough. That's true, they're strong, but we're stronger too. We have Moshe. But the other people said that their impression is that they will not be able to go. Kichazak v'mani is stronger than us. So it seems like up until now, it seems like this is a reasonable debate. We've got a report of what's going on, but their debate is what the results of the report are. Of course, this entire debate is not something that they were asked to give, right? Moshe asked them to give a report of who is there, what's going on. He never gave them to give their impression or their estimate of who will win the war. That's a different discussion. But obviously, this is what the discussion leads to, and we get into a debate if we can win the war with them or not. And now, the Pusik adds something else. They gave out, they expressed the bad words about the land which they went to tour, which they went to check out to the people. And this is where they bring out some conclusions they give out some rhetoric, right? We could say they narrate the story in such a way which is worse than what they saw in some sense. Because they say like this, firstly they deny somewhat the goodness of the land. They said that the land that we went is Eretz Echeles Yishveu, it eats the people that live there. In other words, it's a hard land, that's what it means. Some lands, you know, they're fertile, that's easy to live in them, they're defensible. This is a land that's not defensible, it's not fertile, it kills the people living there. The people we saw there are Anjimidis, men of great measure. In other words, they're great, there's something to talk about, there's something to measure. And we saw also the Nephilim, which is another name for Bnei Anak. And we seem to ourselves to be like grasshoppers relative to them. And they probably think the same of us. So this is where it says explicitly that the Moitzi Dibas Oretz, we call this in Chazal Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, as I think, is not necessarily about telling facts. Up until now, there were facts. And there's even a reasonable debate. We have to, in other words, we'll have to prepare ourselves to be able to win. But now, once they got discouraged, they said we can't win, they start saying they start framing everything in a bad way. It's a place that kills its people. It's the people there are great. There's these giants. They just said it. They repeated themselves, right? They said they're ready before that they saw the giants. But now they're saying, wait, and that made us feel so small. And they probably know that. We're probably small to them, just like we feel small relative to them. So this is where the Pusik explicitly blamed. Vitziba Dibas Oretz is explicitly blaming them for speaking in this way. This is the framing of the narrative in a certain way, which they were not asked to do. They were not asked to give their opinion at all, but they were definitely not asked to narrate the same thing. Like the same thing, if you think about it, the same thing you could have said in a nice way. You could have said, well, this is a hard country to live in, and therefore, Fulgothi will become strong, will become courageous, will become powerful. No, they frame everything in a bad way. So that's the story, and the next chapter is in the middle of the story, but we'll stop here as the chapter stopped, and the next chapter finishes the response, what happened, the response of the people to this, the response of Moshe and Yeshua to this, the response of Hashem to this. There's different responses and different results of this.